Okay, I think.
Are we here?
Let's see. It's still doing a little foof, foof. Yep, we're live.
We're live.
Okay, so.
Okay, so I'm going to put this comment on here.
I'm going to share this link to our CPI page. I'm not seeing people watching or not yet. Okay. I can't tell if anybody's following along or not.
No, it's gone. Oh, we're live now.
There so we are. Okay. So, yeah, so for those who are just tuning in, we are, for some reason, Facebook won't allow us to schedule a Facebook Live event from a page, and it keeps just glitching out. So at least we're using it here. I'm going to share the link over at the CPI page real quick, and then we'll dive in.
Yep, we're live. We're live. Oh, yeah. Okay, please. So okay, so I'm going to put this off.
Okay, so
can you see us though?
Yep, I can see comments.
There we go. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody.
For those who didn't tune in yesterday, I'm Mark Van Steenwyk from the Center for Prophetic Imagination. We basically explore that intersection between mysticism and resistance.
Yeah, and I'm Daniel Wolpert from MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And we do work in spiritual life and leadership, healing in the arts. And Mark and I have been doing all kinds of stuff together for a lot of years now.
Yeah.
Because we're old.
Yeah. Well, now I feel even more old. So yesterday we talked a little bit about mental health, and today I'm assuming there'll be a number along this sort of theme of unveiled, what's being unveiled during this time. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, that's another way of saying that same thing is apocalypse. You know, when you think, hear the word apocalypse, you think of the end of the world. But what that word means is an unveiling. Something is being unveiled and is ending the world maybe as we know it. And so this, I think, has the potential in a positive way of being an apocalyptic time, a time where we start to see the world a little bit differently and then can act into a new way of being in the world.
Yeah, and in the Christian tradition, of course, the main place that this word comes from is the last book of the Bible, right? Revelation, according to John. And the idea was that this was the unveiling of really the reality of the Roman Empire, and that the Roman Empire was not this great, wonderful thing that a lot of people thought it was. But that really it was a manifestation of the negative principalities and powers of the world. And so the apocalypse, the apocalyptic literature, was seeking to unveil that and help people to see that.
Yeah, and so that as a response, people, you know, if you look at the different themes in John's apocalypse, there's all this imperial imagery, you know, beast with 10 horns, bleh, and then there's the people being faithful to the Lamb who was slain, and sort of this sort of almost dualistic seeming kind of image of this way of the Lamb versus the way of empire. And I think we're in a similar moment. We might not want to couch it in such theological language, but we're seeing this, we're seeing underneath the, behind the veil of how our society functions. Maybe it isn't a surprise to many of us, but a lot of these things that were kind of more hidden or obscure are becoming clear, and so we're given an opportunity, which maybe we'll talk about in a future episode about what the opportunities are.
Yeah, and it's, and again, as you said, all of these things have been there, and many people have seen them and known them. But that seeing, that knowing, is often suppressed, right? And that's what empire does, is it seeks to suppress truth, suppress reality. And so even if people know that, it's kind of hidden. And now, during a pandemic, it blows the doors wide open.
So I just want to start diving into some of these. And I asked this question on my Facebook page this morning about what we're noticing being unveiled. But just to kind of dig at some of them, just to get a sense, I think we're going to focus a lot on the economic piece of it, but we might dabble in other things. And if you're watching along, I think there's like maybe 10 people viewing along with us right now. You can share your comments in the thread, and every once in a while I'll peek over and start engaging you with that. But one of the things that's been interesting to notice is things that we just assume like had to be the way they were for you know, economic reasons. Like one of them is broadband. Okay, this is a simple one. Everyone these days kind of has to have the internet more or less. There's ways to get around it, but it's kind of becoming like a public utility. And it's one that is not a public utility at all. It's a private company. And if you want to get more and more data, you usually have to pay like huge amounts. So like, you know, I pay like over $100 a month for internet, which is ridiculous just to have enough data to do things like this live stream, right? And you usually have to pay more, but now all of a sudden they're able to lower, the government is asking them to raise the bandwidth for a lot of people so that this system doesn't shut down. And suddenly we're all able to have more internet access without it being more expensive.
Right.
So did they have to charge us that much the whole time?
Right.
You know, that's one example.
Yeah. And to me, you know, that example falls under the most general category of what I think of as being unveiled, which is that our economic system as it's set up is not designed to prioritize taking care of the population.
No.
That's not the purpose of our economic system. And, you know, you think about how far that has drifted, right, from, you know, if you think about a hunter-gatherer society, right, and you say, okay, well, they've got, you know, they've got an economic system. Their economic system is maybe very sort of simple in some way, but basically it's set up to take care of the people, right? So you go out, you hunt the woolly mammoth, people that can, you know, run fast and throw spears or whatever, participate in that. And then other people are doing other stuff back at the village, and then you share the meat and all the parts of the mammoth. And that's the economic system, and it's basically designed to take care of the members of the group.
Yeah. But now we're like, and this is stuff that we've been hearing about, like David Graeber wrote an article that turned into a little book called Bullshit Jobs. He's also written about bureaucracies elsewhere. But a lot of the things that exist in our economy, the jobs, and often these are some of the best paying jobs, don't actually need to function. If the goal was to have efficiency towards the common good, we wouldn't need so many people in banking, for example. That's a great example. Or so many middle management people who exist in the chain between the owner class and the working class. A lot of these things exist to maximize profit or to, you know, conceal the nature of what's actually happening.
Well, right. I mean, that is now the purpose of the economy, right? It's not to take care of people. It's to simply make money. And so now what we're seeing, when suddenly we have this life-threatening issue for, you know, potentially 7 billion people, we're realizing like, oh my gosh, we don't have the capacity to take care of all these people. Or we don't have the setup to take care of all these people if they run out of money. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly it becomes very, very obvious that our social system is in no way set up to take care of folks, right? And so we're running out of hospital masks. We can't figure out the testing thing. We can't figure out what are people going to do if they're sitting at home and they run out of food. I mean, all of these basic taking care of people functions, we're suddenly in a panic to try to figure out how to do.
Yeah, because we're not set up to. And it's not like we were suddenly taking care of everybody before and then suddenly now not. We're also, a thing that's getting unveiled to those who are paying attention is, wait a second, we're doing this stuff now to to help people out that we could have done to help other people before. So people experiencing homelessness is a great example. Now you're seeing more and more folks who are experiencing homelessness squatting in vacant homes, or that's being reported on more now anyways. And people are like, yeah, this makes sense because we need them to not be roaming around for our public safety. They could have been in those homes this whole time. So again, it's just that they weren't a high enough priority. Now that there are middle class and above people who are feeling afraid, we're seeing the fear being responded to. Before we talk about some more, I want to get to one of the comments. One comment, and then I have a whole list of things that I think are being unveiled. Do you think this pandemic and the consequences will be enough to remove the blinders from some's eyes? I'd like to be optimistic, but it seems very unlikely for people living within the empire will still be immune to any revelatory incidents. To me, the thing that makes this apocalyptic, just like John's apocalypse, it's not like all of a sudden people were like, you're right, the empire's bad, let's just wholesale leave the empire. This is within the biblical tradition, you know, Jesus will say, for those who have eyes to see or those who have ears to hear. To me, this maybe opens up a little crack for more people to see what's going on. But I'm hopeful, but not optimistic.
Right.
I hope that people see this and take this as an opportunity. Because right now it can either go a tipping point towards more people waking up and us starting to challenge the powers that be, or this could be another example of shock doctrine where pandemics and disasters, that's Naomi Klein's book, Shock Doctrine, talks about how disaster capitalism, anytime something bad happens, the ruling class, the people that have a lot of money will somehow try to leverage it to get more power for themselves. So it'll go one way or more direction, one way or the other. It's not going to go back to normal after this.
I feel like, you know, both those things will happen, right? And in the spiritual tradition, there is always this question, right, of what does it take for people to wake up? And so I think that when you have an apocalyptic moment, you do have some people that wake up. And, you know, I do hear that people talking about like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Like, why can't we do X, Y, or Z to take care of folks? We obviously have the capacity to do that. Or for those that maybe have sensed this or have small examples of this, now they feel more empowered because now they're big, huge examples of this that we can talk about. But then you're also going to have a huge number of people who are just sitting around going, when is this going to get back to normal, right? And they can't wait for everything to just be like it was before.
Yeah, then one of the other things I was noticing, and there's an article that I think has been shared a little bit, and some of the stuff that I've noticed, I saw picked up in this article, and it's great. Dan Coyce, I think is his name, he wrote a Slate article called America is a Sham. I'm going to read a quote from that, I'll read the quote later. One of the things he brings up is how suddenly, remember how like for years now we have only been able to have 3.4 ounce bottles of liquid carried on the planes? Because if it's bigger, somehow that's the magic number. If you get 4 ounces, you could blow something up, but 3.4 ounces is safe. Now they're letting people bring hand sanitizer up to 12 ounces. It just shows like how utterly arbitrary and ridiculous that is. And so, you know,
I thought it was only 3.2 ounces.
Is it 3.2?
Man, I've been...
You've that point
two. I've lost 0.2 ounce every time.
You could have had that little bit extra of lotion or shampoo.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, this, a lot of people have commented on how that's an example of security theater. You know, people have already noticed that. Mm-hmm. But if you're all of a sudden you can start carrying on a big ass bottle of Purell onto your plane, maybe it opens your eyes up to the fact it's been bullshit.
Yeah. So what other, we've got a lot of other comments
here. Yeah, there's
here.
A couple new ones. Universal health care was frowned upon a month ago even.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it can alter people's mindset or politicians to see it as a basic right, among other things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's another great example, you know, and I posted a funny little thing about this the other day, right? I mean, 3 weeks ago, you know, Bernie Sanders was being vilified as this insane, evil socialist because the idea of actually giving people the money they need and giving people the health care they need was this totally impossible thing, you know, and now you've got, you know, everybody saying that we have to do this. So yeah, I mean, to me, that's always been a perfect example. Universal healthcare is something that is well within our means to be able to do in our society. The notion that it's not is a complete lie and ridiculous fabrication. But that was something that was able to be suppressed, the truth of that. And now what's being unveiled is, gee, we need to give people healthcare to stop the spread of this, and we can afford to do it.
Yeah, because we're seeing now how interrelated we all are in terms of healthcare, which it's not, again, it's not news. But these things don't, I don't think it's a question of politicians being like, you know, now it makes sense. I think it's a question of fear. I think politicians and people in power only change things when they're afraid of the consequences to do of not doing change. So whether they're afraid now, like, I don't want to get sick and die because they, I mean, maybe they'll create like their own walled off areas of the city where they're untainted from the diseases of the hoi polloi. Maybe they realize they can't do that, and so they're afraid, and they realize we have to have a public response. Or it's the fear of angry people with their pitchforks throw them from power. So some sort of social unrest or pandemic that will reach them might be enough to make them afraid. There's a couple other things that I've noticed that, you know, people have been commenting on a lot that's been exposed is what police are enforcing. So right now, police everywhere are being asked to not enforce evictions, right? And, you know, there's been cities that have been kind of resisting that anyways. But all of a sudden you have this situation where the police are not enforcing evictions and the government is saying maybe different governments are saying we're going to have a moratorium on maybe you don't make mortgage payments you can get behind. We're not going to automatically kick you out. Which shows like that could have, if someone had the flu for a few months in the past and they would have lost their home then,
right?
Like, now we see that they could have been able to just keep their home because it was a lack of will, not because this is just the way the system works.
Right. I mean, medical bankruptcy is one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy in America in an average year. And now suddenly, right, we're like, oh, let's not do that to people. Because if we've got roving bands of bankrupt people with coronavirus, that's not going to be good. And yeah, and so, right, why couldn't we be doing that all the time? Why should people be thrown out of their home because they get cancer? That's insane. That's totally inhumane.
Yeah, and other things like public utilities aren't being turned off now.
Right.
Yeah. Which, again, you know, maybe in Minnesota we kind of have it generally assumed that you don't want to turn off someone's heat in the winter.
Like, yeah, we have a winter moratorium.
We have a winter moratorium, so we've seen that. But there have been places where people have lost public utilities because they haven't been able to pay. And now we're seeing, oh, the governments and the owners could have allowed for this before. Mm-hmm. Catherine wrote earlier on a comment on my Facebook question I posted earlier. She said that we are seeing now that the low wage unskilled jobs are the ones keeping a lot of us alive right now. So food production, prep, delivery. So right. Expose this idea of that wages are somehow, they're not really a reflection of value to society.
Right, which gets back to that original point, right? Is that what society values is what's going to get the most remuneration. And again, in a society where basic human value, taking care of people, if that was the point of your economy, then those people would make the most money or the living wage. In a society where money is the value and we don't care about people, the hedge fund managers make the most money. And right, what we're realizing is that the people who are important are the people that do actual things to take care of people. What other comments?
Angel writes that in Puerto Rico's a fucking hot mess. The governor established a national curfew. The ironic result so far is that there's been 70 arrests and only 50 people tested island-wide. I mean, this shows the priorities of governance to maintain some sort of status quo. The status quo that they're trying to maintain is an economic, making sure that these people up here still have their power and wealth. So I feel like we're seeing this, even with the bailout stuff that we're seeing, like, okay, so maybe Trump is going to throw checks if you have enough money. Like, if you're too poor, you don't get a check. Do you see that?
Right.
Yeah. If you're too poor, you don't get a check. You know, they're thoughtful that if you're rich, you don't get a check either. It's just kind of towards the middle. But most of the money that's going has been going into the stock market. There's going to be bailouts of industries. We're going to see the priorities of governance as we have. Like, it's been very obvious this whole time, but maybe it's become stark when we're dealing with this pandemic that, wait, most of the money is going into making sure those people have jobs. The bailout isn't to keep people working. It's to keep the company's solvent so that they'll still exist, so that the wealthy people can still have something to own. I'm pretty sure that unless there's a strong movement that grows up out of this, we're going to see the gap between the 1% and the 99% grow wider. Like, we're not going to see rich people get poorer. They're going to get richer and the rest of us are going to suffer unless we can put enough pressure on the system for those rich people to be afraid of. And unfortunately, that's how change works, is rich people being afraid.
Well, and the most egregious example of this, I think we're seeing in this, is all these reports that are coming out now that these senators delayed talking about the seriousness of coronavirus until they could sell their stock. Right? And that, to me, is, you know, this is the quintessential example. So these are people that are supposedly representing us and working for us. Well, they're not working for us. They're working for themselves and their wealthy buddies. They dumped all their stock before they said anything so that, you know, then when the price tanked, they didn't lose as much money or any money. And I think that the other piece to this in terms of what does the waking up look like, where are we kind of going from here? I mean, I do think that a big part of this is about, and again, in the Christian movement, in the early years of this, we saw this, is that we cannot count on the fact that these folks in these big systems are going to change and are going to suddenly start working for us. Mm-hmm. And I think that more and more, we need to be empowered to figure out how can we and communities of people really continue to organize and work more clearly for what is in our interest, because the waking up of the whole system. I mean, empire does not wake up. There's very little to show in history that happens.
No, and this is where, you know, Walter Wang, William Stringfellow, and others who talk about the principalities and powers, that kind of spiritual language to talk about systems of power. That almost by definition, like, these institutions of power value their own survival over the survival of its members. So they'd rather eat its people, like devour its people to stay alive than die itself. Every institution functions this way. And we see that, of course, with the U.S. government, but also with the kind of the capitalist owner class. There has to be a certain amount of fear. And then taking opportunities for us, like, this is the problem we're in now, like, figuring out how to organize against something when we're all stuck in our homes is kind of a bummer. There's an article I want people to be aware of out there that, you know, I reached out to Paul to see if maybe we can have a conversation, figure out the technology to do a live stream with this. But he wrote, it's on Waging Nonviolence, called Coronavirus is a Historic Trigger Event and It Needs a Movement to Respond, by Paul Engler. So again, talking about how moments like these, which Naomi Klein calls examples of shock doctrine, there is an opportunity during crisis for it to go the other way if the people organize enough and put pressure on it, which, I mean, this is the big question for all of you to think about. Like, well, how do we do that? Yeah. What are the ideas that you're seeing to get at that when we're in a time of isolation and quarantine?
All right, let's see what a couple more comments. Sure.
Nothing new has been coming in. Feel free to ask questions or give your commentary. There's just some comments about how yes, the importance and vitality of these low appreciated jobs. Catherine asked earlier, like, if the rich wall themselves off, who will clean the toilets in the walled city? Who will grow their food? I mean, there is this interdependence. Like, they need us more than we need them is a truth that I don't think they really want too many people to understand.
Yeah.
They're not wealth producers or job providers.
Job creators.
Job creators. They're wealth. They're wealth extractors, right?
So I do think that, you know, as we start coming to the end of this session here, you know, Mark mentioning that it's hard to figure out what to do while we're all isolated. You know, I do think that one of the things about a time of isolation is that it actually does provide a lot of time for deeper reflection. And, you know, I know that when this first was starting about a week or so ago, there were a lot of comments about, you know, so-and-so genius came up with their brilliant idea while they were isolated in a cave or stuck at home sick or, and that's really true. So I think that these can be rich and creative times. And I think that that's where, you know, we're talking some about the spiritual practices that help to kind of calm our anxieties and calm our fears and get us in a grounded and oriented place. You know, and then the next part of that is that we can really move into a time of deeper reflection and creativity and begin to think about this in our own sphere of lives, our own social networks, our own groups and organizations that we're a part of. How are we going to come out of this in a different way? And how are we going to come out of it in a way that really is more human and focusing our work, our lives, our activities on things that center people first?
Mm-hmm. I think there's potential. Like, there, I can't remember the name of the guy. He was one of the hedge fund billionaires who was who's been tied up in pharmaceutical stuff. But somehow, like, even though when all these pharmaceutical companies were being exposed for jacking up prices, even though he was one of the people funding it, somehow he's still the guy that CNBC and stuff calls to get financial wisdom from. This shows how disgusting it is. Some of these same people who are basically criminals are still the go-to people. But he's basically saying that capitalism is going to collapse soon unless the United States government shuts down and does all these things. So, like, he's basically saying we need to pull libertarian right now. And it shows, like, you know, that scares a lot of people. But when I see a billionaire afraid on national television, I see opportunity because they're going to do everything they can to make things status quo for them, even if it's at the expense of us. But their fear is enough for us to start thinking, okay, that shows the power that we have. They're not afraid of just general forces. They're afraid of how people will respond, how people will act. Yeah. And so this is the time to get creative and think about it. Like, okay, we know the lessons of the past, but we're in a new time. What are the new things that could be done that show us not only how we can live in solidarity with each other, like, especially right now we're isolated, how can we creatively support and encourage each other? But also, how can we think about possibilities for small and large revolution to do things differently? Like, obviously, if we knew what that would look like, we'd be talking about that instead of kind of this big question mark. But this is the time we're in.
Yeah.
What's the new thing?
Yeah, and it's okay to live in that question mark for a while. That's a great way of putting it, I think. All right, so we're going to be back on Monday, right? As I used to say in the old days, same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah, it's the old days.
That is the old days.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for watching, listening, tuning in, and stay safe out there.
Yeah, and feel free, like, this video will be shared after we're done here. Feel free to add more comments, and maybe some of those comments will spark future conversation things, and maybe we'll read some of them. If I'm assuming anything that's commented here publicly is something that I can share on the video publicly. So If you don't want your what you write to maybe be shared in one of our live streams, don't write it or send it to me personally or something. But otherwise, we'll see you Monday and we'll keep the conversation rolling.
All right. Peace. Bye.